your siding and exterior trim for small cracks and chips. Repair the spots and store extra paint in an airtight container so you can spot paint as needed. More information at HouseSmartsTV.com. And now this.
The backyard's looking great, Rob.
Thanks, man. I was planning on adding a deck, too. Know any good contractors?
Why don't you just ask HomeAdvisor?
Home what?
HomeAdvisor.com. You just tell them about your project, and they match you with local pros that can do the job.
Nice. Now, how much does it cost?
Oh, HomeAdvisor's totally free to use. Plus, you can read customer reviews, check pricing, and book appointments for free.
What's the website again?
HomeAdvisor.com. Or just download the free HomeAdvisor app. HomeAdvisor.
Hi, I'm Jeannie Murphy, host of Talented People Radio, produced by Mariah Media. Our show is fun, and we specialize on interviewing some of the most awesome people from around the world. Tune in and watch our live stream on Facebook, and don't forget to subscribe to our YouTube channel so that you can watch past episodes. Talented People airs every Wednesday from 3 to 4 p.m. Join us for some fun.
Good morning. This is Nicole Smith. You're listening to Happy to Help on Hunterdon and Chamber Radio. And for the weather this week, I know everyone's tired of the rain, but it looks like we've got more rain coming down the pike. It's just gray and chance of showers for the rest for the next 4 or 5 days to come. High of 57 today, chance of showers. Thursday, chance of showers and patchy fog, chance of thunderstorms, high of 77. Friday, showers likely. Saturday, showers likely. Sunday, showers likely. So it's going to be right around 70 degrees and rainy.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, WHCR, DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org.
Good morning. This is Nicole Smith. You're listening to Happy to Help on Hunterdon Chamber Radio. We are on Facebook Live today, so if you want to check us out at Happy Hunterdon on Facebook. And today I'm very excited to talk to Jody Ringel. She is the Executive Director of Princeton in Africa. Welcome, Jody.
Hi, Nicole. Thanks so much for having me.
Good. I'm very excited to learn about it because everyone that listens to the show or anyone that knows me, that I am a freak advocate for Room to Read, which works in Africa and works on education, and we're building our chapter in Princeton. So, but I'm definitely excited to learn more about what you all do and what's going on in Africa and how you're engaging social entrepreneurs in Africa. So kind of tell us a little bit about what Princeton in Africa does and what your role is there, and let's hear it.
Sure. So Princeton in Africa is a postgraduate fellowship. So we take recent graduates from different universities, not just Princeton University, but any U.S. accredited university, and we place them with host organizations to work for 1 year. Next year, we'll be working in 17 different organizations across the African continent. And our goal really is that these young professionals get the opportunity to learn new skills, be directly engaged with already established organizations, and then the organizations benefit from really sort of cheap labor that is also bringing enthusiasm and skills that would be difficult to locally source. Mm-hmm. So a lot of our model is not just about placing them, but then also creating a framework where we are providing the fellows with the skills to really responsibly engage with their host organizations, with our host communities, so that it's not just 1 year, but instead turns into a lifelong commitment to become sort of the next generation of advocates for the African continent.
Well, that's great. So what did you do before? How did you find out about Princeton in Africa and get this position?
Yeah, so the organization is 20 years old. I have been there for just 4 years myself. I have, you know, kind of a long and twisting road myself. I actually spend a lot of my job is giving professional development to these, you know, really eager young professionals and letting them know it's okay if you don't always know your next step, because I certainly didn't. So I was in the Peace Corps many, many moons ago was my first step. When I graduated with my master's degree, actually in Latin American economic development, I was really eager to get out, get in the field, move to Guatemala, move to Nicaragua. And I found myself in this space where I could not get a job because I didn't have field work, but I couldn't get field work because no one would give me a job. I actually ended up working at a woman's shelter in Trenton, working with a primarily Hispanic population there. And that's actually one of I then ended up doing fundraising and a bunch of different steps. For a period of time, I ran a small business with a man from Benin where we were locally sourcing different fair trade goods from Benin, Togo, and Ghana, which was sort of my entree into the African continent. But then when I first learned about Princeton, Africa, one of the reasons I was so passionate about it was if I had known about this, this is actually exactly the step that I really needed for my career and to kind of help get over that catch 22 of, well, you can't get there if you don't have these skills, but you can't get these skills if you don't go there. So, every step of my career sort of wasn't exactly the one I thought it would be. But then, actually, when I look at this job and all of the multitude of different experiences that are needed, I never would have been able to become the head of this organization had I not sort of gone off the path so many times.
Well, I love that. And I love that story because I think there's, I have a daughter in college and one going to college, and she was always so worried, like, what am I going to do? What am I going to be? What am I going to, and I said, just let life happen. I mean, you got to like plot the course and kind of plug along and do your best and, and follow the guidelines. But, detours are great. You can't stress out over the detours because that's what makes you who you are. And that's what makes life interesting and exciting, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And I think a lot of times, especially as folks are just leaving undergrad where they may have, they've spent a lot of time on public health or on computer science, they're very much focused on this sector is what my passion is and what will bring me joy. And what I really, one of the messages I really try to share with them is, what you're overall thinking about and what the overall the sector of the organization is important, but it's actually what you're doing on the day-to-day. Mm-hmm. Are you someone who thrives sitting in front of a computer working with an Excel spreadsheet, or are you someone who really needs the energy of other people to be out and talking? And actually, a lot of our placement process with Princeton Africa is thinking just as much about like those soft skills as we are thinking about, do you have a strong background in R and Stata, or do you have a strong background in marketing and communications? So some of the questions that we ask when someone's going through our application are things like, will you thrive in a city like Nairobi or Kampala, or are you somebody who's going to be much happier in a small town where maybe there's 3,000 people and you don't have access to take out sushi in the middle of the night necessarily, but there is a much better opportunity to engage directly. So it's, I think, trying to get young people to break out of the mold of, no, you have to find that single passion. That passion is directly related to the topic of your study, and letting them sort of see beyond that. Because I think all of us who've been in the working world for all know that, what your colleagues are like and what you do between, the hours you're at the workday have a lot more to do with, our overall fulfillment and happiness.
Yeah, and you touched on a key issue that is my mantra is soft skills. Because I don't know about everybody, but I know a lot of kids are, I got to get the 3.8 or the 4.0 in academics and testing and this and SAT scores. And they're all focus on how they look on paper. And they have no clue how to look someone in the eye, how to have a conversation, how to network, how to intermingle. And that's what you're doing at work and in a community or when you're helping people, you're interacting with human beings, which is who we are. And that's one of the things about this show that I'm trying to convey is that just get out there and volunteer or find something to do, because then if you're interacting with a community or volunteering in an office or helping them with a spreadsheet, you're interacting with a different socioeconomic group or a troubled group, or you're interacting with older people, retirees and younger people. So you're interacting with people of different ages and stages, and that's where you develop those soft skills, and volunteering is a great way to do that when you're younger, and then while you're in college, even though you're so busy or on the summer breaks or something. So I love hearing that, and I love hearing that that's important, because I think it's important, but I think people are slow to realize that because the pendulum is definitely focused on the hardcore, paper facts and how you can take a test.
Yeah, and right. I'll tell you that you can teach hard skills, but things like flexibility, being willing to do what it takes – being able to put your ego aside, those are things that you have to sort of develop over a long period of time, starting at a younger age. Learning a software is something that it's a much more teachable thing. So we are really often screening for those soft skills in a much deeper way than just the hard skills.
Yes, humility goes a long way,
humility
right?
Humility really does go a long way.
I know, that's great. Well, I want to talk about so many things, but we're going to take a real quick commercial break, and then we'll be back.
Advancing Hunterdon is an ever-sharp focus on the growth and prosperity of Hunterdon County's businesses. Advancing Hunterdon engages businesses within and throughout the county that are responsive to a call to action as the next chapter in business success. If your business and organization wants to get engaged, contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. Advancing Hunterdon, a roadmap for economic growth for the business community of Hunterdon. You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com, brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
This is Tony Clark, para-planner at Patton Heidi & Associates. Americans believe they should be in charge of their own future, how they will live tomorrow. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has worked for their clients' futures, helping millions of Americans retire on their terms, when they want, where they want, doing what they want. Today, Patton Heidi & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. We are ready to help you put a confident retirement more within reach. Put the strength of a leader in retirement planning to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Patton Heidi & Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you pursue your retirement goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor, Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC.
I'm Andy Ross. I'm chairman of the Ambassadors Committee of the Chamber. As members of the Ambassadors Committee, we contact new and renewing members of the Chamber to get their feedback on their Chamber experience and make them feel more at home with the Chamber.
Hunterdon Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
Good morning. We're back. This is Nicole Smith, and you're listening to Happy to Help on Hunterdon Chamber Radio. Today, we're talking with Jody Ringel. She's the executive director of Princeton in Africa, and we're so excited to learn all about the continent, about the way that they connect young graduates to the organizations in Africa, and it's celebrating its 20th year coming up. So I wanted to talk a little bit about the history of the organization, how far you've come, and what you see for the future.
Yeah, great. So Princeton in Africa, actually, the initial idea started, one of our founders was at the gala for Princeton Asia's 100th anniversary.
Wow.
And said, you know, well, why is there no Princeton in Africa? Why are we only engaging with Asia? And it was sort of from that idea. He at the time was a board member for the International Rescue Committee, which is, of course, a global organization that provides much needed services to refugee populations and is, of course, just as important now as it was 20 years ago and beyond. And so he sort of convinced them, with some skepticism, I think, on all parts, to take two summer interns who were at the time undergraduates and place them in Rwanda. And this was only 5 years after the Rwanda genocide had ended. And actually had so much success with those two that the next year the International Rescue Committee decided to take four graduates at that time for year-long. So it went just between year one and two from a summer to a year. And here we are sort of fast forward 20 years later. We actually are still working with the International Rescue Committee. Next year we'll be working with them across seven countries, Ethiopia, Tanzania, Uganda, Sierra Leone.
No,
a few others. I'm probably forgetting it this time. But we've also really diversified the type of organizations. So now, on top of just humanitarian aid, we're also engaging with both for-profit and non-profit. We have fellows who are working with social entrepreneurship organizations, public health organizations, education, and really the way that the organization has developed. Starting in 2012, we expanded from just working with Princeton graduates to opening up to any graduates of any U.S. accredited university. And the reason really was that the demand from organizations to have, you know, a bright, eager, talented young person come work with them really surpassed what the supply side of Princeton graduates could offer. And really over the last 5 years, one of the things we've focused on is how can we add a lot more grassroots-level organizations, organizations that have budgets of under $200,000, where we really feel like one individual can make a huge impact, and really where that young person will have the opportunity to really work on a wide variety of things. And that's where we are right now, is really trying to focus on how can we maintain a really diverse organization and a diverse number of host organizations, because we don't want to just be focused on public health or just be focused on education, because we spend as much time on cultivating a real community within our fellowships as we do on the partnerships. So we bring them together before their fellowship year, then we bring all of the fellows together for 4 days on the continent for a leadership retreat. And what we want is during those 4 days that there will be connections that will be made, that in 2 or 3 years when one of them is working on a project in education that may have a public health they'll know, well, this one of my co-fellows had expertise in that, and we can build together. And so they're really not just getting what they've learned from their own fellowship, but also helping to absorb the skills that they're getting, that all of their cohort of fellows are bringing together.
Yeah, well, they're building their network, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
A very, very rich network that I love that together. So is it a lot different from your experience in the Peace Corps? Are there similarities or differences from your... I'm just curious.
Yeah, no, I think and it depends on the fellowship host, too, because we have, I would say that I think when people think about the Peace Corps, I think they rightly think, you know, you are out in a community living with sort of, you know, and I had a latrine and no cell phone and no electricity for 2 years. And that is sort of a much, much more typical Peace Corps experience. We absolutely have fellowships that are much more remote without the amenities, but we also have a lot of our fellowship posts that are in cities like Kampala and Johannesburg and, you know, Abidjan.
Ordering sushi in the middle of the night.
Yes, and yes, who are living a very different existence than what an average Peace Corps volunteer would. I think the other really big difference, besides just the timing, 1 year versus two, is that Peace Corps, I think, is done for a primarily cultural immersion experience. I actually did do it for a professional development experience, and I was one of two in my class of 40 or so. Mm. But Princeton in Africa is a career-focused opportunity.
Okay.
It is trying to build skills, get experience in the sector, and nearly all of our fellows are interested in either a career in international development or learning skills that they'll be able to bring back here. Mm. So I would say, especially within the education sector, there is some like amazing work being done in new education models.
Room to Read.
Yes. Yes. Like your organization, Room to Read. And we work with organizations like the African Leadership Academy in South Africa. And so we have fellows who go and are really learning incredible and interesting new models that they're taking back here into the U.S. and integrating into systems here. And I think you were just saying a little bit that people have some misconceptions, and I think one of them really is that, you know, Africa needs people from other parts of the world to come, and that could not be further from the truth. It really, really couldn't. And it's something that we're really careful to make sure that our fellows understand that, like, you are not going to teach. You are going to learn.
Yes.
Yes, you have things to bring. But one of the things I try and hammer home during our orientation is, you, no matter how many contributions you make, and we hope you make many, no one is going to get more out of the next year than you
are. Exactly, yeah. Yeah, well, it was the funny thing is the one thing that John Wood says from the get-go in his book and about Room to Read and him starting Room to Read, and he said, basically, we are different because we don't send a bunch of Americans over there to boss people around in their own country and their own communities. They're there to help and organize and raise up and educate. And so that's one of the reasons that I found the organization so compelling is because they respect and honor and the local people and the local cultures and the community and try and just build on that, right? So
yeah, no, absolutely.
You talked, so there's a lot from Princeton that go in this program, probably because it's just more well known, but I saw Stanford, I saw American University, Messiah, I saw all these, so the word's getting out and people are starting to apply, right?
Yeah, I think we are actually such a unique program. There really are not a lot of ways to go spend a year if you can't get hired for a full-time job. And so because of that, we get applicants, I think from, I'm not even sure, well over 100 universities last year. And I think our current fellowship cohort represents 34 different universities. So
yeah,
and over 11 countries, actually.
That's exciting. And over 550 fellows have gone through the program, something like that?
Yeah. So we are actually we are in our placement for our class of 2019-20 right now, and our 600th fellow will be within, actually, I need to look at the numbers, and I remember figuring out exactly who our 500th fellow was.
And so that's fun.
I need to crunch the numbers and figure out where we are.
Do they get confetti and like a can of peanuts or something?
That would be lovely. We are actually a really small staff, so we don't always have the energy where there's just five of us on our staff, so we don't have time for stuff like that. I'll try and do something special at orientation for them.
No, that's awesome. Well, and we were talking, you just returned from a four-day seminar in Africa for the fellows, right? So can you kind of tell us how the 4 days went and what happened, just to give us a glimpse into the program?
Yeah, sure. And so actually, and before that, I did site visits. So okay. We try and visit each of our host organizations. Myself, our program director, Michelle Spada, and our program manager, Renee Olivier, all travel to different organizations. So I did visits in Botswana, Lesotho, South Africa, Malawi, and then I traveled up to Moshi, Tanzania, where we brought all the fellows together for 4 days. And really what we start with is more of a space of thinking through some of the challenges, helping them, really trying to facilitate conversations so they can share some of the challenges they've faced. We also have a lot of conversations around identity and privilege and what they're bringing into these spaces and into these communities and how and really what the difference is. Some of these are, you know, very wealthy, young, white students. Some of these are African citizens themselves. We have fellows from Ghana. We have, you know, women of color. We have men of color. And so how are all of us bringing who we are and our identity into our host organization? How can we think about that to really responsibly engage with our communities? And then we sort of, those are our first 2 days, and then we end on a much more professional note. We brought in some really exciting different leaders from local organizations in Tanzania and help our fellows start to think about those next steps of their career while also telling them to also stay focused on the next few months and not just start thinking about the future. Just to go back to what we were saying at the beginning, it can be so hard to keep young people from doing so.
Yeah, do you have kind of a placement assistance for them when they come out of the fellowship, or are they kind of, do some of them go to work for those organizations, or do they come back, or what kind of jobs do they find out of the fellowship?
So about a third of our fellows from our last year were offered positions with their host organization, and really the number one reason that fellows are not offered positions is either because there's not enough funding to do so, or because they're trying to transition the role to be taken over by a local staff person, which is of course always something that we greatly support.
Right.
We don't have as much a next step placement, but what we do have is a really powerful alumni network. So now we have, you know, over 500 alumni who are out there. Each of the fellows are matched with an alumni mentor for the entire year of their program. And oftentimes that mentor can help get them, you know, connect them to resources. We also have, there's this very active alumni listserv with different jobs that are out there. I just informally spend a lot of time. I'll talk to a fellow who's really interested in an organization, and I'll go, oh, I know somebody who's there. Let me help connect you there. Nice. I can all, even when I'm really busy, I can't help myself making those connections.
You're a connector. I love
yes,
it.
Yes, but making those connections and getting people to the next step is really one of my absolute favorite things to do.
So, right, because you see them thrive, and you're like, oh, no, I love that. I love that. So coming up on your 20th year, mm-hmm. so you do a gala every year, right?
Yes.
So is this year going to be a bigger, better gala, or what's going on with that?
It is going to be a bigger, better gala. So we do all of our own fundraising. We are an affiliate of Princeton University, but we're an independent nonprofit. So this gala raises about a third of our budget every year. So a lot of pressure for one night. That's okay. And so this year for our 20th, we did decide to sort of step things up a little bit. It's going to be at the Mandarin Oriental in New York on October 2nd. We'll have tickets for sale on our website soon. And we're excited. We're going to be honoring four different individuals. The first two are actually our first two fellows. Emily Holland and Renee Hsia, who have actually both gone on. Emily is now a very well-established human rights attorney, and Renee has done a lot within global health. So we'll be honoring them, and we'll also be honoring John DeMonte, who runs the Bristol-Myers Squibb Foundation, and they've partnered with us. They're actually their global health initiative, which has done amazing work in reducing pediatric AIDS across Southern Africa. And their program will also be turning 20. And we have been placing fellows within their Baylor Pediatric AIDS initiatives since 2004. And then we'll be honoring a man named Fred Swanaker, who founded the African Leadership Academy, which has really grown. It started just as a post-secondary school in South Africa. They now are creating universities across the African continent, saying, why should we be sending our best and brightest to Harvard, to Stanford? Instead, let's create amazing universities here on the continent. So, and Fred actually just was named one of Time 100 most influential. If you haven't, take a look at his speech that he gave there. I'm sure he saved some good things for his speech he'll be giving at our event too. And then we're also thrilled to be able to honor Holly Garrett, who was a very longtime board member and really has helped shape and develop Princeton Africa to what it is today.
Wow, that's incredible. I'd love to go to that.
You should come. There's auctions, and it's a nice night, and because we're doing a little bit fancier, the food should be better than usual.
Let's talk about food for a minute, just because I love hearing about different cultures and cuisines and things like that. So tell us about some of the food that you've had in your experience throughout Africa. Do you just bring Clif Bars or? I'm sure the food's great. No, but it's just different. Some people like to experiment and other people are terrified. So,
Happy to talk about food. I don't know if I should say this. I do feel like West Africa food has a little bit, is more to my taste, I would say. I think one of my favorite things is fufu with soup. So a lot of cultures around the world, and particularly in West Africa, will just take some type of starch and make kind of a ball with it. And then you can have the most delicious, like they call them soups, and they're kind of dipping sauces. And my favorite is groundnut, which is peanut. And that is one of my favorite foods. A lot of East African food actually has a huge Indian influence. And so you have stuff like chapati, which is a bread which is very similar to some of the Indian breads.
Like naan or something?
Yeah, like naan. Okay. And then when you get into South Africa, and this is, I'm painting a very, very general broad stroke of the many, many different foods across the continent. Another one of my favorites is in South Africa, you have sort of a braai, which is their version of like a dry rub barbecue. And I would say that for someone who was a vegetarian for 16 years of her life, I have actually come to really adore goat.
It really?
Is really, really, really delicious and tasty. And so like a braai goat is, I think, Very tasty.
Well, if you have the right spices, then, you know.
Yes, absolutely. But it's also good in a stew. Yeah. So that's something I would never have, my 14-year-old self never would have expected me to say.
Well, and that's why I brought up the Clif Bars, because I can't remember what I read. I read somebody's blog or something, and they had spent some time somewhere, and they were like, oh my gosh, I cannot eat goat again, because it was like goat for breakfast, goat soup for lunch, goat for, and they're like, oh, you know, so their advice at the end of the column was just bring a lot of Clif Bars.
I mean,
it just depends, right?
You know, I think also it is sort of absolutely just a part of traveling and being somewhere for a long period of time. You're gonna sort of crave something that feels a little bit closer to home, and want that, and also,
because my aunt went to India for a month, and she's like, I just had lentils and curry for every meal for an entire month, you know, which is awesome. But she was just like, you know, I just wanted some ice cream or something, you know. Yes. It's just you've got a lot of food memories and what you think. But I think it's good to explore. And we did a room tree cookbook, and a couple of the recipes were native recipes, and ground nuts was in one of those. So, and they're just peanuts, right? Like the normal peanuts that we know. Are they a little different or?
Yeah, no, very, very.
Basically, peanut's a peanut. Yep. Okay, well, that's very cool.
I would say that if you are a deep cheese lover, it may be, and it depending on what area you're in, it can be difficult. It's not a huge dairy culture.
Right. Well, I know, and because one of my friends is moving to Singapore, and her husband's eating as much cheese as he can now because he knows he can't get it in Singapore either. But I don't know. Who knows?
Yes. The Americas are the biggest lovers of cheese.
Yeah. And I'm sure London, too, is like, that's the whole cheese, one of the, well, and I grew up in the Midwest, so Wisconsin, right? And cheese heads, right? Mm-hmm. So, but I think it's good to explore and expand your palate, and we're all going to always have our favorites. If I went somewhere where there wasn't any chocolate available, I might perish, but other than that. So, all right, how are we doing here? All right, well, let's talk a little bit about, the one thing that I loved was the informal motto, Princeton in the nation's service and in the service of all nations. Mm-hmm. So that's, you're living that and expanding that. So I want to have Princeton in Asia on. So how did it take them 80 years to realize that they needed to move to another continent in Africa? Like Princeton Asia was started. Do you know much about that one?
Yeah, no. So yeah, actually it was 100. They were 100 years before.
Oh, 100 years before. You said, yeah.
And I mean, I think that the really kind of sad reality of it is that we, as the United States in general, have not paid much attention to the African continent, have not had very much engagement with the African continent. I think that at the very initial onset of Princeton Asia, and I'm sorry, Maggie Dillon's their executive director if I'm misrepresenting their history, but I think there was a space of, there will be all sorts of trades between Asia and the U.S., and we right now need to start developing Princeton graduates to have a relationship and a cultural understanding that will help lead to, you know, economic development and economic opportunities. And I think what you can found, you know, 20 years ago when we were founded, and really the sad reality is even today, many people are not thinking of the African continent as that opportunity. And that is such the wrong thinking, because China is thinking that. China is engaging deeply in investing across Africa, and there are huge, huge opportunities across that continent. And I think that if we sort of as a nation don't wake up and start thinking about those engagements, then we're really going to be on the losing end of a lot of things. There's things like the mobile money market in East Africa is so far beyond what we're doing here in the U.S., just to give sort of one small example. So I do think that was one of the reasons that it took so long. And I think the other reason, also sort of rooted in a bit of a misconception, I know when our three founders first brought this to Princeton's board and said, we want to start a Princeton in Africa, there was just a fear. There was a huge, this is going to be risky. This is going to be dangerous. And it was just because we're talking about people, you know, not to speak poorly, Princeton trustees in any way. But I think that there is just a misconception and an unknown about the continent. And actually, as a result, Princeton Africa was set up with a different structure. And so we are considered sort of a support organization of the university. We have half of our board is Princeton appointed because they wanted to have a level of oversight. Mm-hmm. I would say that we spend a lot of time making sure that our, you know, health, safety, and security policies are in place. We have a lot of support for the fellows. And I think that finally we're starting to come around to a space where people realize that Africa is a large and diverse continent. I would say most of the health issues are people having their cell phones stolen because they're walking down the street with them and the same things they would face in New York City. Yeah. You know, and so it is a lot of like the same things that young people would face anywhere in the world.
Yeah, just clueless and not paying attention, awareness, right? Yep. And just having a little bit of respect for the culture and the community. Yep. And people, like you said, they're just not informed and educated about that, and that breeds fear. Mm-hmm. The unknown makes you fearful. So mm-hmm. I think, so you've done, so what is the East currency? What were you talking about? East Africa, mobile money. What is it? Is that Bitcoin or what's mobile money? I don't know what that is.
Oh, sure. And I am absolutely not an expert and someone, but there's something called M-Pesa, which is, you know, if I need to send you money, you can just send money through phone.
It's like Venmo?
But much, much simpler, much better. Like, people are, you can just go and purchase anything because we're talking about a lot of a population that has harder access to bank accounts and banking. But we, of course, here in the U.S. also have a lot of a lot of the population here that does not have access to bank accounts. Mm-hmm. So it is really a system where you can pay for almost anything with mobile
money. But you have you have to have a phone, though, right?
Yes, you have to have a phone. Okay. But most people do have a phone. And again, I'm sorry if I'm misrepresenting this. We have fellows who could come on who have a lot deeper expertise on.
No. Well, I mean, I guess that understands mobile money is money on your mobile device. So I guess that, okay. Yeah,
yeah,
I
but just, it is. Yeah. But it's just a stability to be able to buy nearly anything with it, where it is an ingrained and deep, much deeper part of the general commerce of a community.
Yeah, and it's funny that it just seems from my perspective as an American consumer, you see fair trade in Africa all over, plastered all over the chocolate bars and different things like that. So it seems like it's everywhere, but it's still, is it just kind of the fair trade industry? Is that kind of a misconception too, or how?
Yeah, I mean, I certainly do not want to feign expertise on this one either, but I do think, I mean, this was an interesting experience. One of my first times that I ever went to Africa, I was in northern Togo, and I went to visit a women's cooperative that was making shea butter. And of course, I think shea is one of those products that maybe 7 years ago started appearing in almost every, you know, hair care and skin care. And it is an amazing product. But we just think, we see that on a label and say fair trade shea from Ghana, from Togo. I went and I met this women's group and we actually made a batch of shea butter. I cannot tell you how time intensive the process was. Just hours and hours of work to produce this. And what they ended up with was just sort of the raw shea that they sold. And I can't remember the amount, but they sold the shea butter for very little. It was then bought by another company that then bought it for another company. So the value add of that product didn't come until much later. And therefore, like, any potential revenue of all of that hard work happened much, much further down the line than this Women's Shea Cooperative. And again, and I think that it's worth, and this is actually kind of an interesting example where I think that we as consumers of not just products, but also of consumers of movies, of television, of news stories, of media, need to take that second and go a little bit deeper than what the story that's being presented to us is. There's actually a great organization called Mama Hope, and they have a campaign called Stop the Pity, and it is all about sort of stop really transforming the way that we are showing Africa within the media. And they have just these four young men who are footballers talking about how African men have been portrayed by the media. And it's great. It's a really wonderful YouTube video. They are not one of our host organizations, but I believe really deeply in what they're doing. So I'll give them a shout out here.
Yeah, good.
And so I really would, if there's anything that I could, any message I could get out today, it would really be for people to stop, take a more nuanced, go to places like Africa.com that are sharing really exciting news stories of hope of all of the incredible entrepreneurial work that is being done across the continent, all the ways that communities companies are advocating, the ways that, you know, a new malaria vaccine is just being right now on the horizon. There's really exciting things. And so to go beyond the one news story that might be covered in the newspapers we're reading every day, or the one image that we're seeing on movies or TV.
Yeah, I think we have no idea how filtered our news feed is. So, I mean, everybody's covering the same exact story that's the most sensationalized story out there. And there's so much more happening in the world.
Yeah, obviously. And I would say certainly in the last 2 years, I think the space for any other news story has gotten even smaller.
Yes.
I won't go up say anything else.
No. No, that's great. And well, so okay, one quick question. What is shea butter made out of? Is it goat or is it like
no
what?
No, shea butter is a shea nut. It is just
a nut.
Yep,
okay.
It's a nut. You just go, you take the nut. I'm gonna miss some of the process, but you then pound the nut, and then they would hand grind the nut, and then you boil it and skim it and stir it and boil it. And I tell you, I participated in about 3 minutes. I thought my right arm was gonna fall off. And there are women who are doing this for hours and hours and hours. So yeah, no, it is an absolutely like organic product, especially because there are not that many farms. So a lot of shea nuts are just being sourced by, you know, kids going up, getting, just collecting the nuts. So
it is
a great product. I use a lot of shea butter. I believe in shea butter.
Well, no, that's good. But I mean, the thing is though, that Americans or consumers just get freaked out by something that catches on, and then companies see an opportunity to make massive amounts of cash. So they just start marketing it and harvesting it and whatever. Like, cause I was just on the way over here on NPR, they had a story about the palm oil and the, you know, all the forests, rainforests and tropical forests are just being decimated because they're grazing everything to make room for farms to grow this palm oil because palm oil. And I was thinking, people buy gallons and gallons of this stuff, and how much of it just gets thrown away? You know, it's like, so people just, you know, need to be aware and everything in moderation. But we've been trained as Americans to be super consumers. I mean, anyway, well, so how can people help if they want to help? So they can go to the gala, and you've got donation, you have ways to donate on your page, right?
Yes, we do. We have ways to donate on our page. I think that other ways that if people have organizations that are based in Africa that they believe in really deeply and they might be interested in hosting a fellow, they should absolutely get in touch with us. And then I think that if you know sort of a young person out there that is interested in this career path and they would want to apply, our next application cycle will be in October. But yes, like I said, we are always very happy for any donations. We do all of our own fundraising, so yeah, every little bit helps a lot.
Absolutely. All right, we're going to take a quick break and then we'll be back.
Rab Coins of Flemington, New Jersey has been in business for over 40 years. We are highly competitive buyers of gold, silver, and platinum coins, jewelry, and scrap metals, and have recently been named the exclusive gold buyer for Diamond Nation and HealthQuest. We also provide professional appraisals, sales and liquidation services for individuals, law firms, estate trustees, and bank trust departments in New Jersey and Philadelphia. Products and services include gold and silver, American and foreign coins, certified rare date and modern coins, numismatic supplies and books, gold, silver, and platinum bullion, paper currency, United States proof and mint sets, including current issues. From junior collector to the experienced investor, Rabcoin has been for the industry since 1974. Founder and owner Randy Block has been an expert and an active member of the coin industry for over 45 years. Visit us at 56 Main Street in historic downtown Flemington or call toll-free 1-800-819-9875.
The traffic is stuck. Max Living, brought to you by the Max Challenge of Clinton, New Jersey. Join me, your host, Mark LaRose, every Wednesday at 1 p.m. right here on 100 in Chamber Radio. I'll be discussing important health and fitness subjects, featuring guests and success stories. We are here to help motivate you. It's a beautiful day.
When it matters most, our award-winning team of emergency physicians and nurses provides sophisticated care 24 hours a day. Superior emergency care at a moment's notice. 100 in Healthcare, your full circle of care.
Everybody over there!
Get on up!
Everybody right there!
Get into it!
Everybody right there!
Get involved!
Everybody, you...
Did you know? The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce has over 20 active committees that you can participate in. Committees range from focus on business and government to economic development to events like our annual business expo. Contact the Chamber for more information today at 908-782-7115 or email us at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Good morning. This is Nicole Smith, and you're listening to Happy to Help on Hunterdon Chamber Radio. Today, we're talking with Jody Ringel. She's the Executive Director of Princeton in Africa. We're on Facebook Live today if you want to watch us at Happy Hunterdon. And then if you want to go onto the website for Princeton in Africa, it's princetoninafrica.org. And there's lots of information on there, and you can learn about the different organizations that they partner with, and a lot of the fellows have written blog posts and fellow flyer, I think you said it's called. So there's a lot of stories about kids and graduates and what they've gotten out of the program and where they've gone. And so if you're interested in applying for the next cycle, or if you want to learn more about what the kind of work these young social entrepreneurs are doing, definitely check out some of those. And we're going to ask Jody now to talk a little bit about more in depth about some of those organizations in Africa that you partner with.
Yep, great. And then I am also reminded that we do have a Facebook page and an Instagram page. I am not the best person to be talking about social media in the world, but I have some staff members out there who might be mad if I didn't mention that. And that's sort of a great place to go and see the pictures. We have our fellows do Instagram takeovers for a few days at a time, and that's kind of a great way to get a peek into what their day-to-day life looks like. And I mentioned before, I'd love just to chat about a few of the different host organizations that we work with, and some of our long-term partners. I mentioned at the beginning is the International Rescue Committee, where we've worked, for a number of years. Our fellows, the type of work that our fellows are generally doing there is helping to support sort of the proposal and grant writing work. But we also have some of those fellowship posts, like our post in Tanzania, have now developed into communications work. So our next year fellow role will be spending kind of half of their time in Dar es Salaam, the large city, and the other half of their time in Kasulu, working actually in the camps, helping to capture the stories of the refugees. Just going back to what we were saying before, you know, letting these people speak for themselves and tell their own story and capture their own story so that those stories are not being told for them. Another post where we also work within a space of like marketing and communications is Gardens for Health International, which is based in Rwanda. And one of the things that they're doing is helping to really support maternal health by helping to grow backyard gardens. They're called sort of kitchen gardens. They have a product called like the one pot meal. And so how do you in your backyard grow the right ingredients that throw those all in one pot, and that is the full nutrition of what you will need as a pregnant woman, or as, you know, for your young children. And they've just done some incredible work in promoting better nutrition and goals for both for mothers and children. We also work with some really incredible different education organizations. So one I just got back from visiting is Maruapula, which is in Habarone, Botswana, which is kind of, you know, a sleepy mid-sized capital city in southern Africa. And they are actually an elite private education facility. So again, I'm just trying to break down kind of the stereotypes of what people might think the work that we're doing, that this is elite private education program, and our teacher, our fellow there works as a teacher. And what was really cool about my visit there is one of our fellows who was there in 2016-17 is still there. He's still working as a teacher. Mm-hmm. And for me, I can remember back in 2015 reading his application and then interviewing him in 2016 and then his entire fellowship year. And then I got to go and sit in on his chemistry class. Wow. And actually, I think I did pretty well for the homework, considering I was never very good at chemistry. And that's just such an amazing and exciting arc. And I actually also bumped into some of our fellows in You know, when I was in Malawi, two of our organizations that we work with in Malawi are both kind of economic development organizations working within the consultancy space, helping to connect young entrepreneurs with the financing that they need. I bumped another one of our alumni in Malawi who had done her fellowship in 2014-15 and has continued on and has been working with this organization for a number of years, which is exactly the type of things that I really, really do enjoy seeing. We had another organization that we also do a lot of public health work, and I think the field of public health has grown greatly. It is now something that I would caution people who are thinking about public health that I think may be getting overly saturated with people who with a bachelor or master's degree. But we do have a lot of organizations doing incredible public health work, like Population Services International, which is a really large organization that global organization we work with in a number of countries, and then down to smaller organizations like comprehensive community-based Rehabilitation Center of Tanzania, which is a disability hospital in Tanzania. And I've had the opportunity to visit there. I saw my first 3D printing prosthetics being done there. And our fellows have been functioning within the fundraising space and really over the years have written a number of grants that have contributed greatly to the fundraising and has allowed them, not just through our fellows, but in part through their work, they're going to be adding a large new maternal wing to what they're doing as well.
Nice.
So it is a lot of down from organizations like Katuchi Kela Foundation in Lusaka, Zambia, that has our fellow is one of four employees, up to, you know, places like PSI that are these, you know, have tens of thousands of employees across the world.
Yeah, and you mentioned, you said there's kind of a saturation of public health. If you've got some young people listening, where is there a need? If you're starting college today, or where should I study?
I would say absolutely over the last few years, more and more of our organizations have been requesting people with computer science backgrounds.
Oh, wow.
And I think this is, if you have an interest within public health, a lot of our public health organizations like Lawala Community Alliance in Kenya, they're asking us for someone to help develop apps so that when they're going out and collecting community medical information, they are able to do so on a small tablet or on a small phone because they're going to spaces that do not have internet access.
Right.
And so there are, it's sort of, again, thinking about where are the skills that might be most needed. And so we are seeing a lot of that. I think monitoring and evaluation continues to be such an important need. If you can take a class in R and or state our SPSS, it will take you a long, long way.
The state of statistics? What state?
Yeah, there,
okay,
there,
right. I don't know the new lingo.
Statistical analysis software.
Got it. SAR. SAR? Is that what you said?
Software,
not an R. Okay, I'm getting all my acronyms.
There is just R is one of them. So, yes, sorry. It was overly lingo-y.
No, it's good. Well, no, that's why I try to break it down. So, all right, well, that's good. So STEM is not going away anytime soon, right?
Yeah, no, STEM is not going away anytime soon.
No, that's good. Well, tell us about... So, I learned from this. Well, I want to talk about three books really quick. So I read Monique and the Mango Rain. So it was about a Peace Corps volunteer in Mali, Mali. And she worked with the maternal clinic. And it was an amazing, I love that book. And it was talking about everything that the work she did there. And then what other book did I read? Oh, City of Thorns, which talks about all the refugee camps in Dadaab. Mm-hmm. Right. And then what else did I read? I'm reading another one for Kawimbi, which is a book, another organization that was on this show, and they do work in Kenya. And I forget the book we're reading, but I'll put them on my website because I just think reading is so important. And that's a good way to, if you can't travel there, it's a good way to kind of get some stories and learn about the lives and what people are doing. So do you have any favorite books that kind of represent Africa that you've read or?
I would say an author that I would really encourage everybody to read would be Chimamanda Adichie, who has done just, I think she...
I'll put it on the way. I don't know how to spell that.
Yes. I think, I am one of those people who can never remember authors or book names when I need to. So just
I put you on the spot. I'm sorry.
But putting that out there. But that is an author that I would really encourage your listeners to read and to engage with some of her materials and what she has written.
And how did you come across her? Did you meet her, or did you just hear it?
I'm not that interesting or cool. She does actually a piece called "The Danger of the Single Story," where she talks about when she first arrived in the U.S. and how sort of people were her college roommate, how they were talking to her and what they thought of her and looked at her as what her single story is. And it's actually a piece that we use during our orientation, sort of helping our fellows to think beyond just viewing everyone through the lens of one single story. I'm not doing it justice at all. People can go on YouTube and actually watch her speech and to
Excellent.
Talk about it.
That's great. All right, we only got a minute or so left. So princetoninafrica.org, and what else would you to tell people about? What do they need to know about Africa, or how can they learn more about Africa?
Yeah, I mean, I think just going back, Princeton Africa has for the last 20 years and been growing and finding more ways for our fellows to not just engage for a year, but engage for a lifetime. And we are really trying to think about best practices in respectful yet impactful engagement within the African continent. And I think I would just... There are a lot of new sort of voluntourism programs out there, and I would just very much encourage anyone who's thinking of engaging with any other part of the world or in any other culture or even volunteering within your own neighborhood to make sure that you have really looked at the program you're going to be engaging in and making sure that you will be doing so in a thoughtful and respectful manner.
Very well said, and that's a wrap. Thank you so much, Jody.
Thank you.
The news is sponsored by the Hunterdon Medical Center. Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's physician referral service at 1-800-511-4HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
USA Radio News with Chris Barnes.
Attorney General William Barr is under the Senate lights at this hour at a hearing where he's being pressed about a letter that he reportedly received from Special Counsel Robert Mueller, accusing the Attorney General Barr of mischaracterizing key findings in Mueller's final report on the Russia investigation. Democrats want to hear it from Mueller himself. Here's ranking Democrat on the panel, Dianne Feinstein.
I strongly believe that this committee needs to hear directly from Special Counsel Mueller about his views on the report in his March letter.
A 22-year-old man is facing charges this morning of murdering two students yesterday afternoon at the University of North Carolina, Charlotte. Authorities say that Tristan Terrell is charged with 2 counts of murder and 4 counts of attempted murder. And this is USA Radio News.
It's amazing but true. When it comes to one of America's biggest household expenditures, health care, a lot of people think they've got no choice. People are used to thinking we have to do it this way, but they don't. Yes, you have the freedom to choose an alternative with your health care. It's MediShare, and it costs way less than the alternatives. The typical family saves $500 a month, not a year, a month. And if you're single, this can save you a lot, too. And let's face it, a big reason MediShare is 400,000 people strong, it just works. They've shared over $3 billion in medical bills, so they can help share your needs, too. Joining MediShare for so many people is one of those things that makes you say, why didn't I do this before? So yes, the time has come for something better. Look into joining MediShare and see why so many people are opting out of the old way and into the new. Why not look into this? Just call 855-90-PSALM. That's 855-90-PSALM. 855-90-PSALM.
Venezuela's opposition leader Juan Guaido is calling for an uprising to overturn leader Nicolas Maduro there. But now Cuba is stepping up, as is its ally Russia, with intelligence and Russian weapons. U.S. National Security Advisor John Bolton assuring there's not going to be any Russian takeover of Venezuela.
We're not going to see the Russians take over a country in the Western Hemisphere, not directly, not through their surrogates, the Cubans. And that's why President Trump yesterday suggested that if the Cubans don't get off the body politic in Venezuela, they're going to face significant consequences on their own.
A lot of tweeting by President Trump this morning after a firefighters union throws support behind former Vice President Joe Biden back on Monday. After endorsing Biden for president, Trump responded today with an angry tweet saying, quote, "I've done more for firefighters than this dues-sucking union will ever do." And this is USA Radio News.
With a recession ending, if you've been putting off building your business, now is the time to act. General Steel will meet or beat any price on a pre-engineered steel building of the same size and specifications. Act now, before steel prices go up. So call us today for free information.
Call 800-965-1290. 800-965-1290, 800-965-1290.
Alabama lawmakers advancing a bill that would outlaw nearly all abortions in the state. Yesterday, the House passed the bill to make it a felony for doctors to perform an abortion unless there's a serious health risk to the mother. The bill doesn't allow abortion in the case of incest or rape, and supporters' goal is to get this before the Supreme Court, forcing the justices to revisit Roe v. Wade. The bill now moves on to the Alabama State Senate.